County Board will convene. And the next up is a presentation by Siskiyou Waters Association, Water Users Association, excuse me. Item 8A. I guess Rich Marshall is going to kick this off.
Thank you. I'm Richard Marshall, rancher from Scott Valley and president of Siskiyou Water Users Association. And we're going to begin the presentation with a video which has gone viral nationwide. The reason for it you'll see is quite clear, because Siskiyou County enjoys an incredible treasure in Copco Lake. We have many of the citizens from Copco Lake. Many people participated in the putting together of this video you'll see, so I hope you'll enjoy that. And then we'll go into the PowerPoint program. Thank you. So what you've seen, ladies and gentlemen, is emblematic of a treasure that Siskiyou County alone possesses, and which will be destroyed if the dams are removed. The hydroelectric dams support this, and we're going to speak in this presentation that comes up next about the ancient Beswick Forest that should be protected by Siskiyou County. It's part of its natural heritage. So the program that we're going to do today, I'll be doing part of it. Bob Rice will be doing part of it. We spent hundreds of hours both in the video and in the presentation of the map that we'll get to. And we've had donations from many places, including many foundations, to help us, because it was very expensive to do the sonar bathyscape that we had to do to identify the correct locations of the reefs that actually created these ancient lakes, and which John Boyle referenced in his documents. So if you want to begin with this, we'll start with the next page. I want to recognize Jeff Deutscher, and Chrissy Reynolds, and of course Bob Rice will speak later, but they participated in it. In an ancient past, not too long ago in geologic time, there existed ancient lakes and a forest at the same location at today's Iron Gate and Lake Kopko. They are known as Lake Winnaka. Lake Winnaka and Lake Limiti, these are ancient names from the Shasta tribe. The latter was 5 miles long and a mile wide. The lakes formed by the intrusion of the lava dikes, which were very common, you know, this is volcanic country, during the volcanic age with eruptions happening up until 1500 years ago. The mighty Klamath River was dammed, creating the lakes and an awesome waterfall at the location of Kopko Dam, some 135 feet high. Evidence of these lava dikes still exists today, and at the time that J.C. Boyle came upon the scene, there existed a remnant he documented as being 31 feet high, a remnant dike, with the remains of the ancient lake still visible. This lava dike and others upstream prevented the anadromous salmon from passage further upstream past Ward's Canyon. We don't have them today, but we have several documents for the courts from families that go way back over 100 years, long before the dams, will identify the fact that the salmon never went past Ward's Canyon. These dikes served an important purpose in separating the upper and lower Klamath River and the Klamath Lake and its environs. The upper Klamath Lake and the rivers north of the lower lake were populated by long-nosed and short-nosed suckerfish, an endangered species, I would add, and notably the red band trout, which confused many times with salmon.
Next slide.
The red, pardon?
Oh, and next slide.
Oh, excellent, sorry. Thank you. The red band salmon reaches sizes of 35 and 40 pounds, was often confused with salmon, referred to as salmon when it was actually trout. In the early 1900s, it was referenced that way in local publications to attract fishermen from around the country. Importantly, the red band is a carnivorous fish possessing teeth and biological channels to anadromous salmon fry. So if it's released from the dams when they're gone, it was originally kept back by the natural dikes to create its own habitat. Now the next picture. This is a picture of the, you can see the where the lava dike used to be. This whole area was blocked off at one time, in geologic time, and there was a falls where the Kopko Lake exists today. But you can see that if you go out in the area, it's very clear that it was there and existed at that time. There's a study by the University of Texas, by the way, that confirms all of this issue about the dikes. Now the next picture. So looking back, and it should be easterly back from the dam, shows the slot in the lake. You can see that slot, originally that lava dike went across there and formed that original lake that I was referring to. Next slide. During construction of Kopko 1, there was a shot taken, which was given to me by Herman Spanos, one of the old families up there, that shows how the dam was put across the dike. They had to notch there and the dike, the basaltic dike, and put it there. Originally, it was going to go up 1,000 feet easterly, and then when he examined the rocks there, it didn't work, so he moved down to this particular area where Kopko 1 is today. Next slide. So why is this important to us today in Siskiyou County in particular, and in the nation, I would say, and preserving the past and our future? To me, this is what we're here today to say to you, the board, that you need to take an aggressive, positive step towards protecting this valuable resource. And I'll present later the resolution that we prepared for you to look at today. And now I'm going to let Bob Rice take over for the next few slides, Bob.
Oh, I'm coming easy.
He had his 90th birthday a month ago.
Well, I'll first of all say happy holidays. You all deserve it, and we're looking forward to giving you our presentation, because we think it will help you in your making of a decision in 2022. I'm, as Richard said, I'm Bob Rice, and I've lived in Siskiyou County for 40 years. The presentation that I'm going to make today deals with the fact that for many years I was a silviculturist, and being a silviculturist enabled me to pick up on the art and science of managing public land for the people. And in so doing so, I was trained and experienced on 11 national forests in 5 states. Had a lot of opportunities to get involved in water measures, and as a result of being involved in water measures, had a wonderful experience. Many were successful, and I hope that the one we share with you today will be just as successful after you have a look at our resolution. I took my retirement hat off, right? And put on my silviculturist hat. And so
I can't find my retirement hat.
And in so doing, I have spent one lot of time putting effort into doing something that helps us retain the hydroelectric facilities that we're so proud to have. When the Klamath Settlement Group in 2008 made a presentation with respect to doing something about the Klamath facilities, the hydroelectric facilities, they put together a opportunity, and I'm not going to say an opportunity, but they put together a project. And that particular project was designed to take a hard, or to get involved in all of the different resources that were shown in the side program a little earlier. So when I got involved in this in 2010, the document that we first worked on is the slide program that you see up there. And that particular program, that exhibit, 300 miles long, enabled us to have a good look at the 10 million acres that are part of the Klamath project. And by taking a look at that particular map and utilizing the information that we received from that, and I had lots of help from 5 other professionals, in order to take a look at, hard look at that particular map, we decided to divvy up that map into what we would refer to as 7 reaches. 7 reaches. And a reach, by definition, is the distance by which the Pacific Ocean can present water and precipitation from the estuary all the way to Chiloquin. What we had to do, because of the differences between the people that are residing in that particular area, the resources that are in that particular area, the economics that go on in that particular area, and the environment itself, ranging from almost desert to topographic mountains, we divided that particular area into 7 reaches. And as a result of those 7 reaches, we put photographs back on the basis that this is the big picture. And any decision that is being made on the Klamath River has to pay attention to those 7 reaches. And if you deal with 1 reach, you're likely to have a little bit of difficulty with 6 others. Can I go to the other slide a minute? This particular slide, if you hadn't seen it before, indicates that the Klamath Basin essentially is about divided between a arid dry region, which is that region in brown, and the montane region, which that region is in blue. And the interesting thing about those two regions is the fact that you can have a 40-inch rainfall in the blue area and a 13-inch rainfall in the brown area. A tremendous, tremendous difficulty when you start trying to think about putting decisions together that represents the entire 10 million acre Klamath watershed. Well, in 2008, the stakeholders decided that they would go ahead and put together a restoration plan for the Klamath watershed. And in putting that restoration plan together, they chose to go ahead and only deal with one of the seven reaches that are in the basin, that are in the watershed. Go to the next slide, please. So what we did is in 2016, we went ahead and started looking at the location where the settlement group decided to focus their project, dam removal, if you will, and go ahead and try to set up the Klamath National, excuse me, try to set up the watershed into a natural area. So it was our decision to go ahead and try to look at all of the attributes that might exist in that particular reach. And as Richard mentioned a little while ago, there were a couple of very interesting things in that yellow color on the left of the map, left side of the map. You will see a area that was will be called Lake Wanaka. And Lake Wanaka was an Indian term. I can't make it official, but the tribal people have indicated that that was the proper name. So it was 3 miles long and about a mile wide. The other interesting part, the other interesting reef or dike, as you will, is in the orange colored area, and that is the dike that put together a lake, the Lake Clemente. And Clemente is just another Indian term for the name Klamath. And that particular area is 5 miles long, generally speaking about a mile wide, and it is a very popular location and improves well the needs of the tribes. And what happened is that the tribes found this particular area to be ideal, and they put in 17 villages in both the area covered by Lake Wanaka and the area covered by ancient Lake Clement. So you'll see on that particular map a little red, a red dot, and each of those red dots represent one of the Indian villages. The archaeologists, have made tremendous studies since 1890, and they have found that there are over 170 villages, pits, house pits, and numerous, numerous cairns and other things that represent the cultural resources of the Shasta and Modoc tribes. What I wanted to also add on this particular picture is the fact that there were three dikes, and one of the dikes supports the the Lake Clement, ancient Lake Clement. Another dike supports the ancient Lake Winnaka. But the third dike, which you saw a picture of in Richard's slide a little earlier, is also visible and is associated with the construction of Kapo 1 and has a hand in providing the necessary storage for Kapo 2. Pretty interesting. So I want to go a little bit further in my short time here and indicate what else is on that particular reach. One of the interesting things that occurred in 1902 was the development of a Reclamation Act, if you will. And most people think about that Reclamation Act as something to put in water improvements for irrigation. It also has something to do with the development of a particular area. And we found out in the research that the two states, Oregon and California, deeded all of the land within that screen up there, within that area, deeded all of that land to the federal government. The little squares that you see around there are called federal power withdrawal lands. There's 16,000 acres of federal power withdrawal lands, and they are held in trust for the development of hydroelectric power facilities. Another thing that you will see on this particular land is a location of the different attributes that exist in this particular place. You saw pictures of some of them. What we found out was that there are 14 biomes in that particular area. A lot of them are in the green shades, a lot of them are in the white shades, and in those 14 biomes, you will find many, many wildlife species having a habitat in that particular area. I wanted to concentrate a little bit more on the attributes that are in that particular area, and I want to add a little bit about the fact that you'll see a triangle up there. That triangle represents the location of a biome, and there are several biomes, as I mentioned, but there are also some that are multiple resource biomes, meaning that a wildlife species would visit more than a particular one. So there's pictures up there, and the 28 pictures that you see on that particular reach represents, number one, on top of each picture, the biomes where that particular wildlife species spends most of its habitat time, which are also identified by the pictures underneath the biomes, which show the 28 species of wildlife that exist in that particular area. And I'm going to indicate to you, I've got to look at my notes for a minute, but I'm going to indicate to you that within that particular area, there are 171 village house pits and barns, which is very recognizable as a cultural resource area. There is also two ancient lakes that have covered antique lakes. There's three cross river dikes, and we've mentioned those. There's approximately 90,000 acres that you can see on that particular slide. And 16,000, as I mentioned earlier, are trusted to the power company for developed hydroelectric power. There are 14 photographs, as I've mentioned, that have developed the biomes. And 63 species of trees, shrubs, forbs, and grasses. 63 species exist in that particular site for those plant species. I go one step further and I say that the volume of wildlife, which is represented by birds, herpetals, mammals, fur bearers, reptiles, and waterfowl, 143 different species. And lastly, I want to share with you that within those ancient lakes and now occupied by reservoirs, there are 16 fish species that are within the steady river and reservoir study areas that are on that particular map. So at this point, I'm going to turn all I have to say back to Richard. And again, have a happy holiday, you people. We'll see you again.
Thank you, Bob. So the last slide now, and I think a very important point that can't be missed, and I want to make sure it's not missed by the board, is that you have a responsibility to the community, to Siskiyou County, to step up, to step forward and to fight for this ancient area that we've identified. This has never been done before. No one's cataloged all these animals or forbs before, and they exist because the ancient lakes existed there before. This is an important point. This is not something new. These lakes were here from time immemorial until a recent time when the Salmon River, the Klamath River passed through. But now we're going to present to you, for your consideration, we know you can't do it today, our resolution that we proposed, which will set forth the opportunity to do a 160, Section 160 declaration by the county, which will set forth this area as an area that should be preserved. As it is, it's a historical area. We establish the fact that the endangered species that are in that area will be forever lost as a result of any kind of renewal of dams. They've existed there for over 100 years now. And prior to that, many of these species were also there in the ancient lakes, and they sort of reconstituted. So I'm going to give this to Wendy. Wendy?
Yep.
And you can pass that to the board, and then I'll just cover it in brief. You can go to the next slide. So behind this opportunity is to establish for posterity this ancient area, to protect and preserve the endangered species there, protect and preserve the unique fauna, preserve Siskiyou County's ancient history, which will be lost, protect and preserve Shasta Village's and burial grounds, which will be lost, place on the U.S. historical list this unique area and on the California Historical Preservation List, and preserve these lakes for firefighting, recreation, and to protect and preserve the land values and the opportunity for Siskiyou County citizens to enjoy what you saw earlier in the film. This is an absolute gorgeous area which will be totally gone. And now I'd like to ask the people from Copto Lake who've come down to see this today to stand up so you can see we've got a good representation here. And they contributed heavily to the money that took place to do all this. It cost a lot of money, by the way. I emphasize that for the sonar study that was done. We have copies of all this. We can't go through everything today because we don't have enough time. But we offer ourselves, the board and the people of the water users and for Copco Lake, to work with your county council and the board to develop whatever needs to be done to back up the assertions we've made and to go forward into 2022 with Siskiyou County taking a big step forward to fight back. Thank you.
All right. I think there's probably some questions. Maybe the board, I don't know who wants to start. No, but I will, but go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Rich, if I could ask a couple questions.
Sure. You want me to stand up here?
Please.
Okay. Yes.
First off, thank you for the succinct presentation. I think I'm finally getting the cultural area thing. I know it's taken me a while, Bob.
That's okay.
Well, it's complex. I mean, the...
He's not 90.
Sometimes I feel like it.
Join the party.
I guess I'm looking for a couple things.
Yes.
And I will look for a couple things. Other areas that have been so designated. I do know on the Klamath National Forest, there's a geologic designation for the Marble Mountain Caves. I'm not sure how that came about, and maybe you know, Bob, how that came about. You don't need to answer it now, but I'm looking for the information as precedent.
Right.
Maybe to give to the attorneys to take a look at that. I've been involved across the country with a lot of these different areas, and I guess I'm a little, what I'd really like to see to embolden this, should we decide to go forward with that, is that I'd sure like to see the bands of the Shasta weigh in on this, because I know in cultural designations, even though it's an ancient lake and that sort of thing, it's championed, if you will, by a tribe, whether it's federally recognized or not, really doesn't matter, but it bears a lot more weight, I think, with the county standing behind them, before the people that might approve that, whether it be at the state level or at the federal level. Couple things that struck me, and I hope you pursue this, I will, from a county standpoint, is that in the ensuing EIS that FERC says they're going to do, somehow we have to force them to look at the effects of dam removal on 7 reaches. And I know, Bob, you've focused on the precipitation events, which is pretty natural for us as foresters. But I'd also like to take a look at the geomorphological effects of the river itself. Because with those precipitation events, there's a separate biological assessment that has to be done for each one of those reaches, given the effects of the biology of those reaches on an aquatic geomorphology standpoint. And that was not allowed during the first EIS. As you recall, it was confined to within 5 miles of Iron Gate Dam. So somehow, between you and the county, we need to force that total look at the river. I think Bob has something to say. I'll wait for him to get up here.
Hello, Bob. I'm going to come and help him a little bit.
All right.
One silviculturist to talk and do another. My first response to you, Ray, was the fact that on the 11 different national forests that I've worked on in my career, one of the areas that follows the opportunity that we're approaching with you was the ancient bristlecone pine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a classic example of an area where I got into the business of developing a forested area, very limited, as you know.
It's a good thing you're 90, because that happened before I started my career.
The second area that I worked on, which I thought was extremely interested in, is forming the what we would refer to as the inland area of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area.
Okay.
I worked hard on that particular endeavor. Another one that was existed while you were still on board was the business of putting in a national grassland on the Klamath National Forest, which again was a silvicultural study that would help retain in the grasslands on the Klamath National Forest. And the last one that I wanted to talk about, which you mentioned, was the situation associated with development of arrowheads, if you will, a cultural area on the Goose Nest District. He knows that well. But we went ahead and made a designation to protect that particular area from an attribute that was related to the cultural resources.
Okay.
So those are the, it's not new what we're proposing, but what is special here is the fact that we want to put together ancient Beswick forest and cultural area, and that was the 90,000 acres that we showed on that particular map.
Okay.
It's a pretty sizable piece, but it covers a lot of attributes, as I shared with you earlier.
Yeah,
more questions?
No, I don't have any more questions. I guess a statement. As far as the biomes are concerned, I look at that in the seven reaches as how convenient for the first EIS to not look at anything above the dams and not look at anything right below 5 miles below, because it's a very complicated look from the EIS standpoint. But that's something, Elizabeth, that I want to insist on with our next round of whatever input we do with the EIS, if they so announce when they're going to do that. I don't know, and I don't know if you know, you probably don't, but the state cut off the government-to-government relationship with the Shasta tribe. And I haven't talked to Roy, and I haven't talked to Dean, I haven't talked to the other three Dans lately, because they haven't been having their Shasta gathering of whether or not they're pursuing legal action based on that. Do you know?
Yes. Well, what had happened in 2016 was a package was put together by the Shasta tribe. And that particular secret, obviously, because the concern existed that if something happens to the reservoirs, a lot of them which cover the cultural areas, if something were to happen to that, the Shastas wanted to have a way of protecting it. And so what they did is they got together with the state of California, and they filed a lot of the information that I had discussed there, and were represented by 26 different archaeologists. And one, of course, was an archaeologist that worked for me and spent a lot of time on developing that particular, Jim Rock was his name, and you knew Jim, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The interesting part about what they did in that particular document is they involved the Bureau of Land Management. And what had happened earlier was that when the two states turned the land, that turned that 90,000 acres over, when they did that, it went to the Department of Interior and be administered by the Bureau of Land Management. So the Bureau of Land Management turned around and went ahead and became a partner with the Shasta tribe. And as a result of being with the partner with the Shasta tribe, they elected to go ahead and transmit the cultural information stuff that I've prepared. And as a result of doing that, that particular document, which requested some assistance from the area that we shared with you on the resolution, to go ahead and designate. Nothing has happened since 2016. And maybe one of the reasons that nothing has happened is because local government may not have stepped into the position of aiding the Shastas in order to get that particular cultural area identified. So we took another approach, and that is we found the attributes, as I would use the term. We found the attributes up there, and we said, why not take this position? Protect the attributes, protect the ancient lakes, and develop an ancient Beswick. Beswick is the term that they use for archaeology. And then we would go ahead and present back through local government support the opportunity to take the next action, and the next action would be to go to the Preservation Health Group, or Preservation Group, which is the national, the National Historic Preservation of Special Places.
Right.
And that was, that's what we've been pursuing with you, and have given you the information that we think is necessary to make that happen.
Okay. And then I'll yield to my counterpart chair. I have an ask, I guess, of the water users. If it's readily available, I have not seen the 2016 document that Bob's referring to. I haven't seen the Texas dike study. I'd like to be able to read that.
It's 400 pages.
Well, if, or point me in a direction where I can find it.
Sure. The document that I received from Bay is private. Says private.
Doesn't help me much, Bob.
Doesn't help you much. But I have a copy of it. Okay.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to sit down and discuss it with you.
I don't think Betty would.
I don't think she would be concerned at all.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I also had a follow-up on the University of Texas study as well. When was that study done?
That was done, by the way, let me just do a little side note. I found out by accident, just research, that the University of Texas has been studying the Klamath River for years. As the geology is so unique here in this area, they've actually done many studies of this area because of the unique geologic history that our county represents. And the Klamath River is part of that process. So I think it was, as I recall, the date was in 2000-something that it was done. I can give the exact date for it.
Part of the Klamath Knot designation, really part of that?
Klamath Knot, I don't know about that part, but there actually are more studies than that one about these lava dikes. They were very well studied because we have a unique situation here in this area. The Klamath dikes run north to south, and the river runs basically east-west. So they, over many eons, they cut consistently the river, and it would form lakes, and then it would flow eventually after a period of time, work its way through. So it's not just this one set of dikes across the province.
Yeah, the early 2000s, Klamath Knot terminology came out as a result of a pretty extensive study on geology of five different geologies that come together in this county.
I don't want to go into a geology study here, but I want everybody here to know that worldwide, our area is considered the most unique geologic area in the world. Mm-hmm. And I never knew it before, but scientists come from all over the world to do studies here because plate tectonics is so unique here. They can see how the plates work. That area up there where the Klamath River is almost 3,000 feet thick of lava, over five major flows that took place. So it's very unique.
Yeah, we have tremendous biodiversity as a result of the geology here.
No, thank you. You also brought up fires as well, fire protection.
Yes.
For the lakes provide. I know Ms. Reynolds remembers back to 2014. The critical role was also played. We also have pictures of planes dipping out behind those that would not be existing. With the rules always changing, it's always evolving, and we would hate to lose that tool for firefighting down the road. Critical role there. In regards to the Copco Lake, I know the oldest sucker fish ever found was behind Copco Lake. It's a very good ground for survival of sucker fish. It's ironic that they'd be killing it off to take out the dam. In the Klamath Lake itself, the sucker fish has not repopulated successfully since 1991, when the lake level was low. So the federal government's been trying to save it all these years by inflating the water level to keep it alive, and it's never had a successful recruitment all those years. The fact is, the sucker fish did better when the federal government was trying to kill it off. It survived much better at that time, which is kind of ironic, but it did. Biomes, Mr. Rice, thanks for the biomes. This also shows the flaws of single species management. single species management. If they're just focusing on one species, but disregarding all the others within those biomes. So I'm going to stop there in the respect of time, but thank you for your presentation.
One response.
Absolutely.
The interesting thing about the biomes is that you can't single out specifically, unless you deal with the waterfowl or fish or something else, the exact location of the biome. But remember, grasses are a biome.
Yeah.
Mixed oak is a biome. And so you've got a lot of species that will flutter into one of the biomes, and it's hard to determine whether or not there's only one species that goes in the biome. What we tried to identify on this particular picture was the wildlife species that was most commonly found in that particular biome. And that's about the only way we can present it. So that's what that was all about.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well done. Thank you. I'll leave it at that. There's
one minute to close up.
I'm going to get out.
Because there was a question that was asked by Chairman Ray that needs to be, I think, expanded on a little bit. This board has the power in itself to make this decision, at least to proceed in a 160 designation. It can do that. And by doing so, FERC is obligated on the federal level to examine the issue. We did work with some Shasta Tribe members that are aware of this, and we can certainly bring more attention to that issue. But it is not just a Shasta Tribe area problem. The area is a habitat filled with species that are going to be gone if these dams go. This has never been looked at. I think Michael referred to it, or Ray, earlier, that the fact that the only study has ever been about salmon. Well, let's talk about salmon for a second. Glenn Spain, everybody knows who Glenn Spain is, I assume, here, chairman of the Pacific Fishermen. He's on record many times as saying it's not about the salmon. This is not about the salmon. He does that because he knows that we knew about this information. KRRC actually had to change their website because of the information we developed on the lava dikes. And now they admit, even in their own website, that maybe the salmon didn't go up there. But it's about the economics of Pacific Corp, he says. That's the reason. So I say to you, you have a lot of power here to do things, to step beyond the line you normally live in. And I think the county council can help in this, we can help in this, all the citizens of Siskiyou County, I think, would like to help in pursuing this issue and information. So it's really up to you, it's in your hands to make such a decision. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess we're good.
Thank you.
Keep talking. Next, I have Siskiyou Golden Fairgrounds. Siskiyou Muncie.
Hold on.
Okay.
Sorry,
we're
going to do a public comment.
Sorry. Chrissy Reynolds, do you have a public comment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Chrissy Reynolds, Coffee Lake. I just want to thank the board, and I want to thank the Siskiyou County Water Users for being a huge support for the people of Coffee. We couldn't have gotten here on our own. We didn't have the experience of a beloved silviculturist before we joined the Water Users, and without the Water Users really bringing forth that voice, it's huge for the people of Coffco. But I want to acknowledge that the research done was impeccable, and the photographs that you have on those maps were done by local people, and the photographs in the video were done by local people of the wildlife. And the water usage up there for firefighting and fire suppression. But the Audubon Society is a huge also resource. Everything that came out of there came out of their own National Geographic Audubon Studies. And I don't think you can get more credible than that. And so I really want to applaud the board and the supervisors for bringing the issue more than once to the different agencies that have made this a single species studies. Thank you for widening that scope, for continuing to press on that scope, because as you know, as we've gone forward in this process, that scope has been narrowed significantly every time. And I just recently was given a letter from Mike Mallory, former assessor for Siskiyou County, who gave me his letter to use again in my letter to FERC, that by devaluating the property values and by devaluating all of the assessments and by narrowing the scope, they're giving a very distorted picture of the truth of what's going to happen for this Klamath River Dam removal project, which isn't really removal, it's just destruction, because we'll be left with the mess. We'll be left with all of the things that are just left there that we see dying, decaying, and disappearing if we lose our water. And for the millions of animal species, you know, the different species that are up there that don't have a voice, it's critical for them. So I really appreciate your time and for looking into this further.
Thank you.